we'll start with a medrash in the Sedra that needs explanation. The medrash says the following, that when Moshe Rabbeinu heard that he was very soon to leave this world, so he asked the Rabbanu Shel Olam to appoint a leader in his place. Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos Ish Al Ha'eda, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam should appoint someone who would lead the people. And immediately after that parsha of the Rabbanu Shel Olam telling him about the leader or whatever, comes the parsha of Korbanos HaTamid and the Musafim, the sacrifices, the communal sacrifices that are brought at daily, every Shabbos, and special ones on every Yontif. And the Medrash makes the following comment. The Medrash says that the Rabbanu Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu, Ad shetitzaveni al bonai, before you command me concerning my children, in other words, what to do for them to appoint a leader, Titzavu bonai, olai, command my children how they should act towards me, and therefore tell them about the sacrifices. Okay. And the Medrash gives a marshal, an example. There was a queen who was dying, and she called her husband to her bedside, and she said, please, after I'm dead, please take care of my children. So the king answered her and said, her husband said, before you tell me how to take care or to take care of my of our children, why don't you tell your children to respect me properly and how to deal and how to relate to me properly. So too, the Rabbanu Shel Olam said to Moshe, before you tell me what to do for my children to appoint a leader, why don't you tell my children what to do for me to bring the sacrifices? Very difficult medrash. Okay, what is it? What's the meaning? So I was thinking perhaps the meaning is the following, based on the following preface. The Abarbanel, in his commentary to the Torah, in this week's Sedra, makes an interesting point. He says that the sacrifices are called Korboni Lachmi. They're called my bread, my meal. Right? God doesn't eat. He doesn't need us to sustain him. What is that? What does that mean? That the korbanos are like bread or like the meal of God. He says like this. He says that just like physical food is what enables the body and the soul to remain together, because if a person doesn't keep his body up properly and doesn't eat, he's going to die. So what enables a person to remain living when there's a connection between his spiritual soul and his physical body is food. So too, the connection between God and the world, specifically the Rabbanu Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael, comes through the sacrifices. And he says the sacrifices create a means for God's influence, the influence of prophecy, to come into the world. Right? Prophecy meaning God's connection to human beings. So the connection that God, as the neshama of the world, as the spiritual source of energy of everything, connects to the physical world is like food. And the sacrifices therefore create that connection where the power of prophecy, of the connection between God and the world, is able to exist. That's what he says. And I want to add to that just a little bit, that connection is different at different times in the year. There's an ongoing connection, and then there's a connection that's special for Shabbos, and a connection that's special for Pesach and Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah and so on. And each of the special sacrifices of those special times engenders that special relationship also. Just like there are different times and different kinds of food that create a different connection between the body and the soul. Okay. Based on this, I want to say the following. Let's first understand the nimshal. I mean, this king doesn't sound to be too nice, right? Got a great father telling him, instead of telling me to take care of my children, tell my children to honor me and respect me. I think what the marshal is getting at is the following. Of course the king's going to take care of his children. It's his children, right? But there's a very big difference between the relationship between a father and a child that doesn't appreciate the father and doesn't make an overture to want to get close to the father, where the father takes care of the children because he has to, because they're his children. Or a father who the children themselves attach themselves to the father, who appreciate the need for a father, who appreciate the greatness of the father, want to have that connection, so then the connection is much stronger. That's the marshal. Right? The king tells the queen, instead of telling me to take care of our children, that I would take care of my children anyway, but tell the children how to respect and how to appreciate the connection to me, and then the fact that I'll take care of them is in a lot more significant manner than just taking care of them because they happen to be my children. Then where you've created a greater bond between us, and that will ensure that the relationship between us is a very significant relationship. So too, then the Nimshal, the Rabban Shem says like this, what's the purpose of a leader? The purpose of a leader is to connect the people with God. That's basically what the leader is supposed to do. He's supposed to guide the people and teach them and protect them, and all the things that a leader does in Klal Yisrael is to be the one who connects them to the Ribbono Shel Olam, who enables them to have a relationship with God. So before you just tell me to appoint a leader, right, and then the leader will have that purpose of bringing the people closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, why don't you tell the people something that from their end will make them have a greater connection to me, and then the leader will be able to enhance that. He's not going to therefore be the only connection just from a one-sided connection, it'll be a two-sided connection. So if you tell the people how to bring the sacrifices, how to bring them properly, how to create that relationship with me, then they will want to have that relationship, and then they will benefit from the leader who's going to, from my side, give them that relationship, right, in a much more significant way. That's what I think the marshal and the nimshal mean. There's one problem with this Abarbanel, and that is if the purpose of the sacrifices was to bring down God's influence and connect Kibiyachol, the Ribbono Shel Olam, as the soul of all the worlds to the physical world, right, then the sacrifices would only be significant when there was Nevuah, when there was prophecy. But we know in the Second Temple, and right away in the beginning of the Second Temple, prophecy ceased. Hasn't come back yet. And yet, there were 420 years of bringing sacrifices in the Second Temple. So if the purpose of the sacrifices was to bring down the power of prophecy, how did that work in the Second Temple when there is no prophecy? And that I want to say the following. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says that even though prophecy was taken away from the prophets, it remains by the sages, by the Chachamim. The sages still have a type of prophecy, and the Bali Musar, Rabbi Rucham, Ramir, explains that a person cannot learn. Torah is a communication from God to man. That's what Nevuah is, a communication from God to man. Right? Except the Torah is an ongoing communication that everybody can have. But you can't get Torah without having that direct communication from God. God, it says that the Torah comes mipiv das usvuna. The Torah comes from God's mouth. Hamalame Torah mo Yisrael. God teaches Torah to the Jewish people. You can't amalgamate and integrate Torah into the gray matter of your brain like you do other wisdom. Wisdom you can learn with physical kelim. Torah, you need to be. Torah has to be communicated by God. It's one of the reasons why before a person is born, he learns all the Torah from an angel, because it has to be communicated in order to be stored in the gray matter. It's not something that you can just download into your brain and have it. It's a communication from God, so it's an ongoing prophecy. So in the second Beis Hamikdash, there was no prophecy to prophets. But the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, also needed a certain degree of a type of prophecy to be able to learn it and to integrate it. And that was the hallmark of the Second Temple. The First Temple was God's presence rested in the temple. The Second Temple, it wasn't there in that intensity. So the Second Temple basically was the place where Torah Shebaal Peh, where the Sanhedrin, right, promulgated and disseminated Torah to the Jewish people. Ki mitzion teitze Torah. So the hallmark of the Second Beis Hamikdash was Torah Shebaal Peh, which took the place of prophecy of the First Temple, but it was a certain kind of prophecy too. So the sacrifices in the Second Temple helped to bring down that power of the oral Torah into the Jewish people. So it applied even where there was no official prophecy anymore. Okay. Now I want to relate all of this to the period of time that we are now experiencing, called Bein HaMetzorim, based on a pasuk in Eicha, Kol Oiveha Hisiguha Bein HaMetzorim. All the enemies caught up with her, right, overtook her, Bein HaMetzorim, between the boundaries. So the Gemara says on that, Bein HaMetzorim, Bein Shivasa B'Tamuz L'Tisha B'Av. There are two boundaries to this time of misfortune. The first boundary is the 17th of Tammuz, which was on Tuesday, and the second boundary is on Tisha B'Av, which will be in a little more than 2 weeks on Tuesday. So the idea being, I think, and it says the five things happened on Shivasa B'Tammuz, five misfortunes. And five misfortunes happen on Tisha B'Av. Now I want to say the significance of that is, together the five and five is ten. Ten is the number of unity that represents the unity of God and represents holiness. Asiri Kodesh. Ten is a number of holiness. Okay? Meiser, we find that they're giving a tenth, and the tenth day of Tishrei is Yom Kippur. The number 10 is related to holiness. Why? Because the number 10 represents the unity of all the various things in this world under God. How does it represent that? From the first from the number one obviously is the ultimate unity. That represents God. Echad, one. After one, from 2 to 9, each integer is a separate thing. Once you get to 10, you take all the numbers before and unite them into one unit called 10. That's how a decimal system is. That's why the next number is not a new number. It's Achad Esrei. You take the unit of 10, you add another one. It's 1 plus 10 in Hebrew. In Arabic numerals, right, which we use as numbers, so there 10 is represented by 1 10 and 0 1s. So you're going back to the unit of 1, but now it's the collective one. So what is holiness? Holiness is being part of the oneness of God. Taking all the various things in the world and uniting them under God into that one unit. That's holy. So the number 10 represents holiness as well as it represents Achdus, total unity. Okay. So the number 10, the fact that 10 misfortunes happened between Shivasa B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, means that our holiness and our unity was taken away from us. The misfortune hit the number 10, but it was divided into two parts. Five on this side, five on this side. It starts with five and it ends with five. In order to become holy, in other words, in order to have that connection to God, you need two steps. One is what we initiate, and the other is what God consummates. Just like a prophet. Okay, a prophet, to get prophecy, to have that connection with God, has to prepare himself. He has to work on his midos, he has to have certain midos, he has to work on his intellect, he has to work on his emotions. A prophet does many things to be fit to be a prophet. But ultimately, whether he's a prophet or not, depends on God communicating with him. You can't connect yourself to God, right, on your own. You can do everything you need to be fit for prophecy, and then God sends that communication and creates that connection. That's called prophecy. So too over here. Shivasa Batamuz entering into this time of misfortune, there were five misfortunes that represented the fact that our part in making ourselves fit and preparing ourselves for a connection with God were impaired. And that's half of the relationship of ten. And then once we impaired our part and we broke the kalim, we impaired the vessels and the means for us to be fit to have that relationship with God, then God from his side broke that relationship with us. That's Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av represents God's breaking the relationship from his side, and Shivasa B'Tammuz represents our breaking the relationship, the ability to deserve that relationship and to be fit for that relationship from our side. And let me explain what that is. On Shivasa B'Tammuz, what were the five things that happened? The first one was that in the time of the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai on the 17th day of Tammuz, 40 days after the giving of the Torah on the 6th day of Sivan, and he found the Jewish people worshipping the golden calf, and he broke the luchos. The luchos are called luchos habris. They're called the tablets of the covenant. A bris means a connection. A covenant is where two people make a deal or a pact with each other where they have a connection to each other. On those first luchos was something that was not never again given. The second luchos had the Torah on it, the Aseres HaDibros, but they were missing something that was on the first luchos. That was Torah Shebal Peh. Somehow the oral Torah was contained on the first tablets that Moshe brought. When they were broken, they were not, the Torah Shebal Peh then was not reinstated on the luchos. It was something then that a person had to learn on his own, externally or whatever, not intrinsic to the luchos themselves. So the bris between that we create, right? We need to work on learning Torah and Torah Shebal Peh, and using those luchos that we have, the tablets of the Torah, to connect ourselves to God. So that's what we have to do, and that was broken. We broke our connection through Torah Shebal Peh, through the oral Torah. That was Shivasa B'Tammuz, the first thing. Second thing, Butol HaTamid, the daily sacrifices were abrogated, based on what we said before, the Abarbanel, that through our bringing sacrifices, we create the energy source for then God to connect himself to the world. So that's the second vessel, the second means of being fit, of doing things that will help us to connect ourselves into God, right, was broken. That was the sacrifices. Sacrifices were lost on that day. Third thing was Sreifas HaTorah. The Torah was burnt. First time in history that a Sefer Torah was burnt by a posthumous, a Greek who burnt the Torah. All these things happen at different periods in history, but they all represent the same idea. Like the Torah, the written Torah, is also an Eidus Yisrael. It's a testimony that we have a connection to God. When the Torah is burnt, it's like that testimony is burnt. So that's another means for us to connect ourselves to God, is through the written Torah. And that was abrogated on Shivasa B'Tammuz also in history. So that's the third means of us connecting to God, which was affected on Shivasa B'Tammuz. The fourth thing was Hamodas Pesel Behecho, that Menashe put an idol into the Heichal. The Heichal is the holy room in the temple where the Shulchan is with the bread on it, and the menorah is, and the Mizbeach HaKtores, the incense altar, that's all in the Heichal. And those are the things that are utensils that we use to make our connection to God in various ways. The menorah is through wisdom, Torah wisdom. It helps to create that relationship with God of Torah wisdom. The Shulchan is the Shulchan of Malchus, of royalty. It helps to bring royalty to the Jewish people, which is another means of us connecting into the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Mizbeach Hazov represents Kahuna, the priesthood, which is another means of God connecting himself to us. Okay, we're a Mamleches Kohanim. We are a kingdom of priests. So the kingdom is one thing and the priests another thing. Those are the means of the Ribbono Shel Olam's relationship with us. And therefore those utensils were lost in our being able to create the atmosphere, the environment, for God then to connect himself to us. And the last thing, the fifth thing, was Hufka Ha'ir, the city of Yerushalayim. The walls were breached. Another way that we prepare ourselves for a relationship with God is by Achdus, is by being united together in a holy environment like Yerushalayim. And when the walls are breached and foreign powers come into Yerushalayim, foreign influences, and the walls are breached, and therefore the unity that those walls created is broken, that also is a breach in the environment that's necessary for us to create, for God to connect himself to us. So, and all of that happened, all these misfortunes happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz because of our sins. It says in Tehillim, Hatsileni Merodefai, save me from those that pursue me, ki amtsu mimeni. Simple meaning, because they are stronger than me. But the Sfarim say what it means is, save me from those that pursue me. The fact that misfortune happens is mimeni, comes from me. The misfortune gains its strength from my weakness. Because I do sins, I bring misfortune on myself. So the fact that we abused these kelim, the utensils, the environment, to be able to be fit and ready for God to connect himself, all of that happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz, from all these standpoints. So that's the first part of Bein HaMetzorin. That's the first side of this time of misfortune, where we affected our part in connecting ourselves to God by abusing the things that could make that connection. And after our part was destroyed, so then the Ribbono Shel Olam from his side took away that connection. That was Tisha B'Av. What's happened on Tisha B'Av? Both of the Batei Mikdash were destroyed. So God took his Shechina away from the Jewish people in the first place of Mikdash. He took away the power of Klal Yisrael, right, of Torah Shebaal Peh, the second Beis HaMikdash. Beitar fell. Beitar was the last stronghold of a Jewish monarchy. Bar Kokhba was already, after the destruction of the Second Temple, was still acting as a king. And they thought he could be Mashiach. And he was killed in Beitar. So the monarchy was destroyed. Right? That's God took away that connection. Nechrash Ha'ir, the city of Yerushalayim, was plowed over in a later period by the Romans, and therefore the whole power of the city of Yerushalayim, that unity of the Jewish people, that being impervious to foreign influences, was totally destroyed. Right? We broke down the walls, and then the Ribbono Shel Olam saw to it that from his side he destroyed that connection completely. And the fifth thing is that it was decreed on the generation of the desert that they should remain in the desert, not go into Eretz Israel. So God took away his connection to those people, took away their ability to go into Eretz Israel, left them in the desert. So on Tisha B'Av, God separates himself from us, because on Shivasar B'Tammuz we separate ourselves from the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Bein HaMetzorin. And that's the five on this side, the five on that side, and the misfortune of losing the ten in totality. So what is the Avoda of Bein HaMetzorin? So what are we supposed to do? So we are supposed to work on bringing back those utensils and those means and that environment to create that relationship with God, and then hopefully the Ribbono Shel Olam will reinstate that relationship. So what are we supposed to do? So one thing is obvious, to strengthen ourselves in learning Torah. Learning Torah and appreciating those that learn Torah, especially Torah Shebal Peh, and strengthening our connection to sacrifices. We don't have sacrifices today, but what takes the place of sacrifices? Tefillah, davening. So strengthening ourselves in davening. There's something else that also is considered like bringing sacrifices, being honest and just, doing justice honestly. That's also considered like bringing a sacrifice, honesty and justice. So a person has to be strong in those things, and also mishpat and tzedakah, and justice and also means charity, giving tzedakah also. And also, what's it called, in uniting amongst ourselves and protecting ourselves from foreign influences, right? That also is something to strengthen oneself during this time. And also to have emunah and bitachon, not to put the idols in the heichal, where we depend on other things for our sustenance and for our political power, whatever, not to have faith in politics or in money or whatever it may be, to have faith in the Rabbanu Shel Olam, right? That also is important. And in what's it called, in understanding that the Torah, and appreciating the fact that the Torah is that which creates that bond between us and the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Those are the kelim that we lost, and if we strengthen ourselves in each of them in the way that we can now, even though we don't have the full force of those utensils and those means, but we strengthen whatever we can, then maybe the Rabbanu Shalom will give us back those utensils, and in addition then he'll create that relationship with us again and see to it that he brings us into Eretz Yisrael, back to Yerushalayim, builds the walls, builds the Beis HaMikdash again, reinstates Malchus Yisrael, the real leaders, the real leaders who will be what's it called Mashiach, bring all Jews united back into Eretz Yisrael, and that's when Tisha B'Av will turn into a Yontif, right? When Ho'emes, the Hashalom Elv, when people love that Emes and Shalom that brings God's presence to the world, then it'll taka come to the world, and Tisha B'Av will be not a fast day, but a tremendous Yontif. Maybe even this year. Yes.
Thank you for the good cheer and welcome back. I just want to ask you, with all this pushing out to the Yeshiva boys now, do you think this is like a punishment from Hashem because we aren't studying seriously enough? Or nothing comes out of nowhere. It's right. The more bizarre the decree, the more usually it's a message that's to do something and change.
Could be that the Rabbanu Shel Olam, instead of putting it as a punishment, yeah. But I don't know, I'm not a Navi.
Yeah.
But it definitely is an opportunity for us to rethink, right, how much a person wants to sacrifice for Torah. And therefore, maybe I have to do it even if I'm not going to get, you know, government help or whatever. And also, does the Torah really need a secular government to support it? It's very nice and it gives them a schar for doing it, but is that the only way that we can learn Torah because we have some secular government? So it may be a test to see if we really appreciate the Torah and willing to sacrifice for it. There are generations where they didn't have government, you know, things, and they had to sacrifice. They learned Torah under the threat of the Romans or the Greeks killing us, and we still learn Torah. So maybe that's what the Rabbanu Shalom wants, to increase the Zechus HaTorah, where it shouldn't be so easy and people should have to sacrifice for it. I don't know. Again, that's another possibility.
Thank you very much.
How is honesty called?
It says Bitzedek uvamishpat, what's it called, is there's a pasuk that says that is like bringing a sacrifice. Because the whole idea of sacrifices is that I totally subjugate myself to God. So by doing justice and being honest, right, I am totally subjugating myself to the Rabbanu Shalom too. And don't try to get things for myself out of the realm of what God says is proper or whatever. So therefore it's also like a sacrifice.